The Fake Show podcast is sponsored by the law firm of Hutchison & Steffen, North Fifth Brewing Company, Threads of Envy, The Tone Factory Recording Studios, Moonshot.com T-shirt Designs, and by Mr. Antenna. Now your host, Jim Tofte.
Ed Roland is the frontman and primary songwriter for Collective Soul, a band formed in the early 90s in Stockbridge, Georgia, now based in Atlanta. Their breakthrough came in 1993 with a hit single, Shine, and many others would follow. Their new album is their 12th, and it's another great one as they prepare to hit the road this summer. I've got Ed Roland on the line right now in Atlanta.
Hey, Jim.
Ed, welcome to you, and congratulations on your 12th studio album, Here to Eternity.
Thank you so much, buddy.
What was the process in putting this album together? I'm not sure how long this one took.
Well, it started, we recorded Elvis Presley's estate in Palm Springs.
Yeah.
It started last January 2nd, and I came in with 10 songs, and they recorded 10 songs in 4 days, the band.
Whoa.
We're an old school band, record live, so they
yeah.
knocked it out, and I was like, oh. Got the house for 3 more weeks. I do not want to leave Elvis' house. It's kind of special.
Uh-huh.
So y'all go play around the desert for 4 days. I'll try to write more songs. So I wrote 10 more songs, and they came back in, and we just kept recording. We didn't set out to do a double album. It just so happened we just couldn't stop.
How did you end up at Elvis's estate in Palm Springs? That's pretty unusual for Atlanta guys, isn't it?
It is. I had actually met a couple of the guys that owned it, bought it. You know, Elvis, when he passed, Priscilla and Lisa wanted nothing to do with it, really. So no one had lived there since Elvis' passing. So when we got, I'd met the guys that owned it, gone over there and seen it, and, you know, 3 years earlier or something, right before the pandemic or whatever. And I was like, cool, it's Christmas. It's Elvis' house. You know, he spent his last Thanksgiving, last Christmas, last birthday. He did his last 3 records in that house. But it was just nothing. We just staged it. And I called him and I said, can we just have it for a month? And they're like, sure. There's nothing in there. I was like, okay, we'll put furniture in there. And we kind of designed it what we thought Elvis would like to have. And, you know, 2023, and just had a blast. And I just couldn't stop the momentum that the band was going with. They were just on fire. Like, okay, it's a double album now, guys.
That is awesome. And that you would set that place up like that and feel Elvis's presence, right?
To think that I slept in Elvis Presley's bedroom for a month is kind of awesome.
Yeah.
In itself. You know, Sean, our engineer producer, slept in Priscilla's room, and then we set the control room up in Lisa Marie's, and then you had the open space where Elvis recorded, and that's where we recorded. And then the night Lisa Marie passed, her ceiling in her bedroom fell in on all the gear and everything. It was a moment of spookiness, I should
say. Really? I have to say, your new single, which I have listened to a few times now, Mother's Love, you enlist longtime Paul McCartney guitarist Brian Ray. How did that collaboration come about?
I had met Brian a couple of times out on the road, out with Paul, and I didn't know he lived in Palm Springs. And we were having lunch. He walked in the restaurant, and I was like, Brian, yeah. And he said, I live here. I was like, oh, cool. We're up at Elvis' house. I said, why don't you come over tomorrow? We'll break bread, have lunch. And then why don't you bring a guitar just in case? You know, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I cut my way into it. And sat him down. And he played on 2 tracks for us. Just, I think he had a great time. He acted like he had a great time. We were having a great time. So it was just a blessing to have somebody of his talent. I mean, what a talented guy. Just an absolutely wonderful human being, too.
It's an amazing song, too, by the way. Brilliant. And you are in fine form. You should be very proud of that song.
Thank you. I am. I'm very proud of it. I mean, the other cool thing about being in Palm Springs is Mickey Thomas from the Starship lived there. So I did the same trick to him. I was like, why don't you come over and have dinner? And he came over and we sat there at 2 o'clock.
It's kind of like inviting people to unsuspectingly to a Tupperware party or something, right, Ed?
Driving around in a pink Cadillac because I got so many Tupperware parties going on.
I look back on your songs and I can't help but remember The World I Know. It meant a lot to me and a lot of people. Beautiful musically, and as you say, it's a song about compassion that is important today as it was then, right?
I think it's more important today. I mean, what's going on, just with what's going on. I'll just leave it at that. You can pick so many subjects to bring that song's lyrics to. And, you know, I just, how I wrote it, why I wrote it, I can't remember what I was feeling, to be honest with you. But I'm glad it happened. But it's one of those songs, I think, still means as much today, if not more, than it did when I wrote it.
I've always heard the story that you guys were in New York and you were taking a walk around the city and you saw a little bit of, the homeless culture and so forth.
Yeah, it's part of that, but that was my awakening to, like, you know, no matter how bad we thought we had it, somebody had it worse. And it was just me trying to recognize the yin and yang of life, if that makes sense. But I didn't know I'd go that deep, kind of, if that makes sense. I was just, at that time I was dating my girlfriend, I was just trying to impress her, writing a song in front of her. And it came real quick, but it's one of those things, I think sometimes you start channeling things and it just happens.
I'm curious, when you brought that song to Atlantic Records, what did they think of it?
You know what? We had a strange relationship with Atlantic Records. They never knew we were recording, so I would just bring them the record and they'd go, "Oh God, we made our second quarter." I'm like, "What are you talking about? Do they even like the songs? What are they talking about? They're talking business over here." So anti that. I mean, they never complained, but I never heard, like, "This is a great song." It's not one of those we had with the record label.
What do you recall about playing your first show, which I believe was probably in 93, end of 93?
It was the end of 93 where we did, it was called Album 88. They were the 100-watt college station, Georgia State, that would play in the 80s when they came on. They would play like The Cure, The Cult, R.E.M., songs that weren't on proper FM. So at the time, so it opened my eyes to a lot of things. But every Sunday night, they would have vocals only. So my brother and Will were in the band. We're going to Georgia State at the time, and I made a set of Shine and a song called "Good Night, Good Guy." And I just said, "Give it to them, play Good Night, Good Night, Good Night, Good Guy." I thought that was one of the better songs, and they just started playing Shine, and then it became their number one requested song on that station. And then they asked us to play a Christmas party that year, and we didn't really have a band, so we worked up, I think, four songs that we had to play an hour, so we played Shine like five times. And every time, everybody's just going nuts. So I was like, okay, this song's hitting something.
You guys, up until that point, worked just kind of casual living room, playing together sort of group, yeah?
Yeah, we weren't like, my brother and Will and Shane, the drummer, had a frat band. They would play Georgia Tech frats. And when Georgia State called me to play a show, I just called them and said, "Hey, guys, can you just learn three or four songs?" And they were like, "Cool." That's how we did it. That's where it started.
You're on the road this summer with Hootie and the Blowfish and Edwin McCain. What a great show, and how awesome that Hootie and the Blowfish are out there. I don't think they've been out there for a while, yeah?
I think it's been 5 years. But the cool thing about the show is, like, we all knew each other before we were all signed to the same label, Atlantic Records. I remember Edwin showing me, at the time it was called Love Suicide, said, "I'll be," listening to it in a car at a bar in Atlanta. So we've all grown up together. We've known each other. We sleep at each other's house. Just been that kind of, you know, we've just been those kind of buddies. And just to be able to enjoy each other's company, which we do. We love the same thing. We love the music. We love fishing. Love golf. It's just going to be a fun, it's like going to summer camp. It really is.
You've got 12 albums now with all that material to choose from. You're on this co-headlining tour. Is it difficult to kind of whittle that material down to what you'll be using on stage?
Extremely difficult. I mean, because there is a time limit. So what we try to do is not overdo too many of the new songs. So we try to get three of the new ones in there and then play the ones that got us there so we can play three new songs, if that makes sense. We're going to play Shine and World, December, you know, the ones that people know, which we love doing. There's nothing, we love that. But at the same time, we still want to make sure people understand we're still, you know, kicking. Still trying to do better than we did the record before.
What is touring like now, Ed, compared to the 90s when you started out and went out there the first few times?
Well, it's a lot calmer. You know, wives and children kind of present a different lifestyle where you kind of pay attention to what you're doing. Whereas prior to that, there was that part of the world in life. So it's really, we're really family first. I mean, my mom comes out and hangs on the bus for a week and our children come out. It's just fun. I mean, that's the only time we get to see our family, really, in a quantity time, because they got to be on the bus with us all the time. So it's good. It's quality and quantity. So I would say we still have our southern roots in us. We'll go out and throw down a little bit, but it's a lot more healthier, I would say.
Collective Soul's new double album, Here to Eternity, is available May 17th on all the platforms, and the new single is out there right now. You can get tour dates and ticket info at collectivesoul.com. Ed, thanks so much. It was great catching up with you. Have fun out there this summer.
Thanks, Jim.
Just awesome stories about living and recording at Elvis's place in Palm Springs and basically bribing guest musicians with a nice meal. That's all you have to do. That finishes this episode of the Fake Show Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Jim Tofte. I'll see you next time.
Listen to The Fake Show anywhere on SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, and thefakeshow.com.
Send alone to New York City.